The afternoon session will consist of a discussion by Mr. Bernard on the site selection criteria, and in particular, he'll spend some considerable amount of time on some lighting considerations and why it is that we ended up with the 7 degrees to 20 degrees sun elevation angle. And I think that this will be of particular interest. Then Mr. Dornbach will talk about the site selection data sources and interpretation of these data. And I think with after that, we will have a short discussion period. We'd like to have Aaron Cohen come in sometime before 4 with a summary of the questions to date and see whether or not we've got answers for them, well-defined answers, and what the actions are that need to be taken and who it is that ought to take them. Without wasting any more time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Bernard, and he'll go into the site selection criteria. I thought of a pun for Bernard, but man, I've had it. I couldn't hack that one. I get the Mr. Menard out in the yard for me, and I guess I can say that. Our thing's out in the yard.
As Owen has indicated, the lunar landing site selection presentation will be given in 2 parts. I will concentrate on site selection criteria, and John Dornbach will follow by site selection data sources and interpretation. The objectives of the site selection activities are to develop a site selection criteria, to develop methods of ranking the candidate sites, and to analyze available lunar surface data in ranking the sites, and ultimately to select candidate landing sites. This activity should be completed at least 6 months prior to the launch date to accommodate targeting requirements. The basis for site selection is to utilize the site selection criteria in conjunction with all of the available lunar surface data to yield a set of candidate sites. Now, I will concentrate on site selection criteria. And the site selection criteria is made up of the constraints and requirements imposed by lighting, CSM performance, the landing radar, and the LEM landing stability and dynamics considerations. The lighting requirements will establish the site spacing requirements. CSM performance will define that region of the lunar surface which will be considered for site selection. The landing radar requirements will define what the lunar topography has to consist of during the approach to the landing site. And finally, the LEM landing requirements, which are the landing stability and dynamics, sort of define what the lunar topography must be like at the landing site and what the soil properties must be. We will now discuss lunar lighting. Lunar lighting and visibility become a consideration during that portion of the descent trajectory where the lunar surface must be observed and interrogated. Now, the visibility of obstacles on the lunar surface are strongly dependent on the sun angle, the elevation of the sun angle, the viewing angle, and the relationship of these 2 angles. In order to provide favorable viewing conditions, the sun angle limits must be constrained to within some maximum and minimum boundary. In establishing the sun angle limits, each of the items noted on this chart will be discussed. Now, the sun angle limits do indeed interact with site selection because they do define the spacing, the required spacing of the landing sites. The reflectance properties of the lunar surface are presented on these 2 charts. The right-hand chart presents the variation of luminance on the lunar surface as observed from 0 degrees to 180 degrees. These characteristics are given for three sun angles, 10 degrees, 45 degrees, and 90 degrees. And for comparison purposes, the broken line presents the reflective properties of a typical earth material, which is sand in this case. Now, the lunar reflectance properties presented on the right-hand graph were derived by Willingham at JPL from observations, photoelectric observations taken of two Mare areas. These were rather low-resolution data. However, these photometric properties have been confirmed by higher-resolution Ranger data. These photometric properties are utilized in the Ranger Block 3 analyses and will be utilized by MSC in the reduction of orbiter data. It is hoped that the surveyor may provide some additional insight into the reflectance properties at short ranges. Now, to briefly describe what we have on this right-hand chart, let us assume that the sun is illuminating the lunar horizontal surface at an angle of 45 degrees. And let us assume we are observing the lunar surface from this point, which is approximately 15 degrees above the sun line. Then the brightness or the luminance of which the observer experiences is noted by that vector there, and we see it's approximately 500 foot Lamberts. If the observer and the if the observer was coincident with the source, that is the sun behind the observer, then the brightness would be 900 foot Lamberts. Now, the lunar surface acts as a retroreflector, with most of the luminance going back into the direction of the source. And we note that independent of the sun angle, whether it's 10 degrees, 45, or 90, the luminance is always approximately 900 foot Lamberts when the viewing angle is coincident with the sun angle. Now, this phenomena results in a washout situation, which indicates that independent of the slope of the lunar surface, when the sun and the viewer are coincident, you will always get essentially the same brightness. So independent of the slope being observed, when the sun and the viewer are coincident, you will always get approximately 900 foot Lamberts of brightness. Now, for the typical Earth material, which is a semi-specular material, we see that when the sun illuminates the surface from 45 degrees, the maximum illumination occurs at an angle equal and opposite to the illumination angle, and it's noted by this spike here. For all other viewing angles, we note that the brightness level is essentially constant. Other reflectance properties are noted on the left-hand chart. The albedo variation is small, from 0.065 for the Maria to 0.13 for the bright rays. Now, the contrast on the lunar surface depends on slope variations and shadows. Now, these reflectance properties were utilized by MSC and contractors under MSC's direction to determine the detectability of obstacles. The next three slides will present some typical detection data. I would like the right-hand screen off, please. This chart presents detection range for two obstacles, protuberances and craters which have a diameter to height ratio of 10 to 1 and a diameter to depth ratio of 10 to 1. Now, presented on this chart are the horizontal detection range as a function of the solar angle. Here, when we speak of the solar angle, we are talking about the elevation angle of the sun. These data are presented for both the protuberances and the craters and are presented for two viewing angles, a viewing angle of 14 degrees for the craters in this case and 38 degrees for the craters as noted by this line. Now, in this situation, the the sun is over the shoulder of the observer. And the key point of this chart is that as the sun angle increases, the detection range decreases rapidly. In addition, when the sun angle becomes greater than the viewing angle, here at the sun angle is 14 degrees and the viewing angle is 14 degrees, the detection range essentially goes to zero. That is also noted here for the 38 degree viewing angle, where when the sun angle increases up to 38 degrees, then the detection range essentially goes to zero. So the key point of this chart is that in order to have some detection capability, these data pertain to the craters and two viewing angles, 14 degrees and 38 degrees. The broken line corresponds to a 30-degree viewing angle and the solid line to a 0-degree, rather a 30-degree viewing azimuth, and the solid line corresponds to a 0-degree viewing azimuth. And we see from these data that for a viewing angle of 14 degrees, that detection range is enhanced for a viewing azimuth of 30 degrees as the sun angle tends to become greater than the viewing angle. However, for the 38-degree viewing angle, we note that a viewing azimuth tends to degrade the detection range. So depending on the view angle history, a out-of-plane azimuth may or may not enhance detection range. Now, this chart presents detection range as a function of sun angles varying from 5 degrees to 175 degrees. In this region, we've repeated the data presented on a previous chart. This applies to a viewing angle of 14 degrees, a viewing azimuth of 0 degrees. And again, we note that as the sun angle becomes greater than the viewing angle, the detection range becomes essentially 0. Now the sun is at 90 degrees, it still is at 0, and now we're in the forward hemisphere, and at approximately 140 degrees, we begin to have a detection capability again because of shadowing that we're picking up, and it goes up rather rapidly. Now, these data do not account for glare and scattering that you would get in this region. The next few slides will discuss those effects, but in essence, the scattering and the glare will essentially give you no detection range capability at these sun angles. Now, the right-hand screen shows the sources of scattering. You have the scattering at the window, which causes a veiling luminance. You also have scattering within the eye due to the direct sunlight into the eye, and this can be computed into an equivalent veiling luminance. So the two sources are the eye and the windows. A degradation is also accounted for due to the transmission of the window and the visor. These effects are shown on the next chart. Now, this chart compares veiling luminance as a function of sun angle, and the broken line represents the luminance of the horizontal surface, or rather the background luminance. This solid curve down here presents the equivalent veiling luminance due to the scattering within the eye, and we see it's rather insignificant. However, this curve indicates that the veiling luminance due to scattering within the window is 5 or 6 times greater than the background luminance in the region of interest, therefore precluding any detection capability in this region. Now, shadows enhance detection, and they also enhance recognition. So this chart shows the maximum sun angles, which will just result in a geometric shadow of 3 typical crater configurations. For a crater with a diameter to depth ratio of 12 to 1, it is noted that the sun angle must be less than 18.5 degrees in order to have some geometrical shadowing. For a diameter to depth ratio of 8:1, the sun angle has to be less than 28.6 degrees to cause some geometric shadowing. Now, the most typical crater configuration is a diameter to depth ratio of 10:1, and it is noted that in order to have shadowing, the sun angles must be less than 22.6 degrees. Now, the minimum sun angle, which can be considered from the point of view of excessive shadowing, is approximately 5 to 7 degrees. Angles less than this would cause the crater floor to be completely contained within a shadow. In addition, it could cause favorable landing areas to be contained within a shadow. So based on shadowing considerations, the minimum sun angle has been taken to be 7 degrees for site selection purposes. Now, this chart briefly summarizes the results of the analytical studies. The key points are that the detection range is extremely sensitive to the sun angle and degrades rapidly as the sun angle increases. A viewing azimuth does enhance the detection capability for low viewing angles and degrades the detection capability for higher viewing angles. Glare and scattering at sun angles in the forward hemisphere preclude those considerations. And the existence of a washout band within the zero phase region, that is when the sun angle and the viewing angle are coincident, result in a dead band for our analysis of 5 degrees. We are utilizing a dead band of 5 degrees about the zero phase angle. Now, many of you have probably seen the model that was set up in the auditorium over here. That model of the lunar surface utilized cupric oxide, which is an approximation to the photometric function developed by Willingham. And you probably recall that when the light source was above the viewing angle, that you did indeed lose all the detail on the model. And that is a major consideration that has been derived from the analytical studies. Mr. John Dornbach, who will be speaking next, has some orbiter data that he will present. These are photographic mosaics, and they also present the effect of washout at a zero phase angle and the loss of detail as the sun angle is greater than the viewing angle. Now, the analytical studies have established the relationship between the viewing angle and the sun angle. This chart presents viewing angle histories applicable to the descent trajectory discussed by Mr. Cheatham earlier in the symposium. Now, two curves are presented here. We are presenting view angle as a function of range to the landing site starting from the high gate point. The lower curve represents the view angle to the landing site from high gate down, and we see it varies from approximately 15 degrees to 35 degrees just prior to touchdown. The upper curve represents the maximum possible view angle. That is when the astronaut is looking down against the window limit. And we see that the maximum possible viewing angle to the lunar surface varies from approximately 25 degrees to 45 degrees. Now, given these view angle histories, we can examine maximum sun angles in light of the requirement that the sun angle be less than the viewing angle and that we've assumed a 5-degree deadband. The right-hand screen indicates that the maximum sun angles required to provide a favorable viewing condition of the landing site throughout the flight phase from high gate down must be approximately 10 degrees, increasing to approximately 35 degrees. Now, the maximum possible sun angle, which will provide favorable viewing conditions of the lunar surface from Highgate down, are approximately 20 degrees, increasing to approximately 45 degrees just prior to touchdown. Now, if the maximum sun angle of 20 degrees is examined here, we see that we do indeed have favorable viewing conditions of the lunar surface from Highgate, and that we have favorable viewing conditions of the landing site when the range to go is 1,000 feet. A maximum sun angle of 20 degrees also takes advantage of the shadowing that is available for the three typical crater configurations, thus enhancing detection and recognition. So based on these considerations, for site selection purposes, the maximum sun angle is taken to be 20 degrees, and as previously stated, due to excessive shadowing, the minimum sun angle is taken to be 7 degrees. Now, these sun angle limits are considered in conjunction with CSM performance to establish that region of the lunar surface which will be considered for site selection purposes. Now, Pete Frank, has discussed this slide in the next two slides in some detail, but I will just briefly discuss these to refresh your memory. This slide presents the accessible lunar area for a typical month when the lighting conditions are favorable. And here we're presenting latitude and longitude on the lunar surface. And we note that the accessible area varies from 5 degrees north latitude to approximately 20, and it varies as a function of longitude. Now, these accessible areas vary from month to month, and the next slide will indicate the lunar accessible area for a typical year. And we see that for both the Pacific and Atlantic injections and various combinations of these, that the accessible area lies roughly within a latitude of 5 degrees north and 5 degrees south. So these latitude boundaries have been taken to define the region of interest for site selection purposes. The longitude boundaries are established by tracking and communication considerations. The eastern boundary is taken at 45 degrees, and it is defined by power descent considerations. The western boundary is taken to be minus 45 degrees, and it is defined by the ascent considerations. Now, this chart presents the regions of the lunar surface which can be acquired and yet satisfy the sun elevation constraints of 7 to 20 degrees. And these are plotted as a function of the landing date. And also noted on this are the launch dates. The important point to be made here is that for any given landing site longitude, we see that only one launch date exists for that landing site longitude. Therefore, depending on the launch philosophy, for example, a consecutive day launch philosophy would require two or more sites which are spaced in longitude approximately 10 degrees. Let's take, for example, the 1st and 2nd of February. We would have to be spaced approximately 10 degrees in longitude. If the launch philosophy called for a 135 type launch, then we would see that on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th of February, it would require sites that are spaced approximately 23 degrees apart. So these lighting constraints do impose the requirement that the sites be spaced in a manner dependent on the launch philosophy. to summarize the CSM and lighting considerations, we have established the region of the lunar surface which will be considered for site selection purposes, the sun angle range of 7 to 20 degrees has required that the landing sites be spaced in longitude in a manner dependent on the launch philosophy, and the lighting considerations require a sun angle range of 7 to 20 degrees and that the view angle be greater than the sun angle when the lunar surface is to be viewed and interrogated. We will now briefly discuss the spacecraft surface interactions. Here we are concerned with the interaction of the landing radar with the lunar surface, and we are concerned with the requirements imposed by the landing stability and dynamics considerations. The portion of the powered descent trajectory where the spacecraft interacts with the lunar surface is at this point, where the landing radar altitude update is initiated. This will be detailed on the next chart. We see that landing radar altitude update begins at approximately 30 nautical miles uprange of the landing site when the spacecraft is at an altitude of approximately 25,000 feet. Now, throughout this flight phase, the landing radar imposes requirements on the characteristics of the lunar topography. These are detailed on the next slide. During the last 30 miles of flight, the landing radar requires that the topographic slope not exceed plus or minus 2 degrees, and the local deviations, terrain deviations, not exceed plus or minus 5% of the LEM altitude at any point during this flight phase. The size of the lunar area which must satisfy these topographical constraints are presented on the bottom half of this slide. The dimensions vary from 16,000 feet at the landing site to approximately 8.5 nautical miles at a point 30 miles uprange of the landing site. The inclination of this approach ray will vary as a function of target location, and the inclination can vary as much as plus or minus 6 degrees. We've now discussed the restrictions on the approach path. We'll now address ourselves to the landing area itself. The landing area has been defined as that corresponding to the 3-sigma dispersion ellipse. Based on Don Cheatham's presentation, the 3-sigma dispersion ellipse for the range-free guidance mechanization resulted in a major dimension of 52,000 feet and a minor dimension of 10,800 feet. Now, within this landing area, the LEM landing stability and dynamics requirements impose that the lunar topography have certain characteristics, and in addition that the lunar soil satisfies certain requirements. Now, the previous speaker went into some detail about the analyses carried out on landing dynamics and stability, and he indicated that the maximum allowable penetration was 44 inches for the LEM. And you might also recall that the maximum tolerable surface slope was 7 degrees when the surface contained 24-inch depressions. So therefore, we are considering a 7-degree slope, which contains 24-inch depressions. We see that the maximum bearing strength must be, that the bearing strength must exceed 8 psi when the constant, or 5 psi per foot. Now, if the surface is devoid of holes, the surface slope can be greater. It goes up to approximately 13 degrees, and the soil bearing stress must be at least 4 psi constant. Now, to prevent excessive sliding, the soil coefficient of friction must be at least 0.4. Now, these two slides present the site selection criteria and essentially summarize my presentation. Based on CSM performance, the lunar area of interest for site selection purposes have been established. The lighting constraints on sun angle, the 7 to 20 degrees, have established the requirement that the landing sites be distributed in longitude at least 10 degrees for a consecutive day launch philosophy and 23 degrees for an every other day launch philosophy. The lighting considerations are 7 to 20 degrees, as previously discussed. The landing radar has required that the approach to the lunar surface exhibit certain characteristics, and these are noted on the chart. The landing site has been taken to be that defined by the 3-sigma dispersion ellipse, and within that landing area, LEM stability considerations have defined the acceptable topographic slope and have defined the requirements on bearing strength and the coefficient of friction. That concludes my presentation.
Ben Milwitzki, please.
Do you want to repeat
let,
that?
Let me repeat that if I can. Mr. Milwitzki's point was that although the photometric function, as was reviewed here, indicates a certain range of sun angle as being highly desirable, well, it does indicate that, and that he understands that the surveyor data generally confirms that that there is a range of higher resolution in the low sun angles, but that the degradation of the visibility is not as bad at the higher sun angles as the photometric function that was just reviewed has indicated, that in fact the photometric function for the actual lunar surface is possibly not as bad as the one that was used in the analysis. And this is a cursory look at the data, and I understand that we can look to Mr. Milwitzki to really nail this thing down from the data they've got. Did I interpret that right, Ben? There is no question that low sun angle data is best.
I'd like to ask what the principal contributors are to the veiling glare, whether it's the window on the lamp or the helmet on the spacesuit, and how the scattering properties of these object surfaces were established to compute the veiling glare.
Dr. Shoemaker's question was what were the main contributors to the scattering, the window, the helmet? The window or the helmet, I guess, largely.
And how these are established.
The scattering of the window was only considered, not for the helmet. And a rather pessimistic scattering coefficient was used, assuming that the RCS system had left deposits on the LEM window. And I believe the scattering coefficient was 0.3.
It was a 0.1. point one rather.
And so the data on that one chart do apply to that one scattering coefficient.
The question was this based on a test or an assumption?
It was based on an assumption. Yes.
Do you have a comment?
There has been one experiment in the sample that will be noted on the window on the jet. Okay. But the test without the numbers was a quantitative figure for what the scattering really are.
The answer to the question was that the number was really based on an assumption, but there have been some test, there has been some testing done to establish that, that there is deposit and that subsequent testing will be conducted to really nail it down. Yes, sir. Eric Stern.
These requirements were probably brought out earlier in the symposium, but the consideration is one of excursions in limb attitude. And as the slope and the local deviations exceed those presented in the criteria, it would probably result in the excessive attitude rates or excursions in, from the nominal attitude. So it's a vehicle attitude consideration. In addition, excessive attitudes could cause a loss of lock of the.
I believe in the next discussion you'll hear. This was treated parametrically by Dornbach in treating the problem from here on, and he has treated the range as being a variable from 30 miles to 20 miles to 10 miles for this fan. And I would suspect that the radar isn't quite as bad a constraint as we've laid on here, but in selecting the sites, we have used these more adverse constraints. Some work certainly could be done to reduce that as a constraint. John?
Again, on the windows, the grids on the window, or use the basic figure for your window on that chart there, how do they compare to the Gemini condition?
The question was, how did the assumption for the window degradation compare with the experience in Gemini? And I don't know if you know about that, Angie. I know. I didn't hear that. Speak up real loud so everybody can hear you.
Well, I believe the Gemini spreading was larger than the 1-2-0,
so it was different deposits, so it's hard to make an analogy. The GT9 flight that was observed by the crew, that there were particles from the reaction control systems in the other vehicle, actually looked like rain droplets that came back and impacted the window, and they were yellow color, and they actually observed them and reported them. And I don't know what the actual numerical reduction of this has shown, but there certainly were deposits from the other vehicle. Dr. Von Braun?
Because the astronauts can see the landing
Dr. von Braun observes that the shadow of the limb with the sun behind you could be an aid both to surface contour identification by the crew and general observation, and as an altimeter, in that when he hits an altitude of zero, his shadow's got to be with him. Mr. Loftus has looked into this rather considerably in the last little while, and he observes that as the pilot views the sun angle, views his own shadow, it will almost always look the same, because it's the same included angle, almost independent of the terrain. And I think that if you viewed it from another spacecraft, it might look different as it's rippling over the surface, but not from the one that you're in. And certainly the altitude, you can pick up the altitude effect, and we're looking at this from helicopters, or we hope to in the future. We haven't done this too much, but probably the altitude effect would be of significant help to us.